Right, handing over to you for agenda paper three.
Great, thank you, Sue. So we'll now discuss agenda paper three. This paper analyzes comments on the tentative agenda decision about the application of the amendments to IS1 issued by the board in January 2020. The tentative agenda decision discusses how an entity classifies debt as current or non-current in three different fact patterns. The committee received 36 comment letters. Most respondents agree or do not disagree with the committee's technical analysis of all cases discussed. However, almost all respondents expressed concerns about the outcomes of applying the IS1 amendments, particularly for cases 2 and 3. As set out in the paper, we will first ask the committee to discuss our analysis of comments on the committee's technical analysis, and only after discuss our analysis on comments on the outcome and potential consequences of applying the IS1 amendments, and whether the committee wishes to finalize the agenda decision. So starting with the technical analysis, paragraphs 17 to 27 in Appendix B of the paper include our analysis of comments on the committee's technical analysis in the tentative agenda decision. Based on our analysis, we continue to agree with the committee's conclusion that in all three cases described in the tentative agenda decision, the entity is required to classify the loan as current. I'll now pause and direct your attention to question 1 on page 8 of the paper and ask whether the committee continues to agree with the analysis and conclusions in the tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Okay, so just to reiterate what Gustavo just said in terms of the rules of engagement, because I think it's going to be important to have a structured conversation that I'm quite strict in terms of what we say when. So first of all, what we want to discuss is any comments on the technical analysis set out up to the end of page 8. So what the words and the standards say, and please hold till later whether you think those are good words or not, or good outcomes. First of all, just what the words say. If I could get people to comment on that, please. And I'm going to be strict, warning you now. Okay, John, do you want to go first?
Certainly. But first, I appreciate your comments, Sue, because I think it was very helpful to separate the words on the paper from questions that we'll discuss subsequently. So the words on the page, I agree with the analysis. I agree with the conclusion that the analysis leads to. I thought the staff's views were well laid out, well articulated, and I think they led to the conclusion that the words on the paper would lead you to. So I agree with the analysis.
Thanks, John. Donna?
Thank you. I want to echo John's sentiments that I agree with the technical analysis. I do think that the paragraph 24, where we talk about EC48E, does cause confusion. I think it was just useful to pointing that out in the staff's analysis. So yes, on question 1.
Thanks,
Donna.
Sophie?
Yes, I still continue to agree with the staff conclusion that based on the current wording of paragraph 1690 and 72A of IS1, the debt must be reclassified as current in all the three cases. That's all for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Feels like the calm before the storm. Bob?
Okay. Thanks, Sue. Yes, I recognizing that the interpretation can only interpret standards, not rewrite them. I agree with the staff. I think the agenda decision's conclusions and the application to those three cases are appropriate. It's appropriate interpretations of IS1 as amended. That does not necessarily mean I agree with issuing the agenda decision at this time, but I'll come back to that later.
That's fine. Thanks. Lisa?
Thanks, Sue. And I'll continue to agree with everyone else that, you know, as IS1 is currently written, I feel that it does support our decision that we made, the committee and the staff analysis of conclusion, but we'll come to question two.
Thank you. Yang Su.
Thank you. Like others, you know, I also agree with the staff technical analysis. If we strictly follow the amendment, we cannot but get to the same conclusion as the staff does. So as for the technical analysis, I support the staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Yang Su. Brian?
I continue to agree with the staff analysis. I find the wording of the amendments pretty clear, actually. I thought the comment about BC 48E in paragraphs 24 and 25 are quite interesting. I felt that we discussed this last time and discussed the fact that those paragraphs do seem to relate to covenants that test financial performance, whereas the covenants we're discussing are about financial position. And although I think it's fairly clear in the agenda decision that those covenants are about financial position, perhaps in retrospect it would have been helpful to have spelled that out. But I continue on question one. I continue to agree with the staff analysis.
Thanks, Brian. Carsten.
Yeah, not much more to add from my side. I also agree with the staff analysis. I think it's very clear and convincing. So nothing to add from my side. I also agree.
Thank you. Jens.
Just to no wind where I am, I agree with the technical analysis.
Thank you. Bertrand.
I also agree with the staff analysis and conclusion, and nothing more to add.
Thank you. Dora?
Well, I basically agree with the staff's analysis and conclusions, but that being said, maybe I should talk about that later, but I am a bit concerned that quite a few respondents concerning about the application of IS 1, 2, on case 2 and 3. So I will talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Thanks, Guy. Guy. Guy, we can't hear you. I'm not sure if you're speaking. Still can't hear you. I won't take your silence as wanting to publish the agenda decision. because I want to give if I was a betting woman, I would bet that you're going to be keen for us to report at least something back to the board. Well, either way, we're going to report something back to the board, and I want to have as much information as possible to report back to the board for their information. So even though we don't technically need this, and this is not, please don't conflate this with a decision on the agenda decision. Could I just get a show of hands for the committee members that agree with the technical analysis? So question one, and then we'll move on to what we do and what, if anything, we do with the agenda decision. But can I get a show of hands on the technical analysis, please? Okay, and Brian? You agree?
I think
everybody agrees with the technical analysis. Okay, but we know that's not the end of the story, so don't panic. All right, Gustavo, am I handing up to you, back to you, sorry, to tee up for the next section of the paper?
Yes. Yeah, sure. So continuing, paragraphs 28 to 49 of the paper include our analysis of comments on the outcomes and potential consequences of applying the IS1 amendments and also requests for standard setting. Based on our analysis of these comments, we recommend the committee reports to the board its technical analysis and conclusions on the matter, and respondents' comments highlighting those that might provide new information to the board. Paragraphs 50 to 53 include our analysis of whether the committee should finalize the agenda decision. Appendix A to the paper sets out the proposed wording should the committee decide to finalize the agenda decision. So I'll now pause again and direct your attention to questions 2 and 4 on page 17 of the paper, and ask first whether the committee wishes to finalize the agenda decision. Second, whether the committee agrees with our recommendation set out in paragraph 54 of the paper. And then finally, whether there are any other matters the committee members would wish to report to the board with respect to the IS1 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Gustavo. You were all super, super helpful in terms of being very constrained in what you commented on in the first round. I think in terms of this round now, it's probably fine if we get any feedback that you want to raise, or observations, comments, questions, both on whether you think we should publish the agenda decision, finalise the agenda decision, and or whether particular things you think the board should be made aware of. So happy to combine those two aspects. So who would like to comment? Donna.
Thanks, Sue. So my first observation is that the agenda item seems to have given market participants a second opportunity to comment on an exposure draft that has actually already been issued. An amendment that's already been issued by the IS. And I am personally between a rock and a hard place, in the sense that the first thought is the ISB has issued. It's gone through due process. It has been exposed, comments raised, amendments made. I do note, however, is that the specific wording that was changed, or the recommendation, or some of the comments letter that raised the point that the specific changes that were made after the comment letters had been received on the exposure draft had resulted in the amendment 272A, and that in itself had not been exposed. So in my logic, I'm saying that I'm comfortable that this does get sent back to the ISB for consideration again, because the original wording had not actually been part of the original circulation, and the original exposure draft had rather been an amendment made in response to questions and concerns that were raised by the market participants. However, I do believe that the way I come back and where I say I'm in a bit of a rock and a hard place is that we seem to have opened up a bit of a can of worms, because now everyone and their auntie is basically losing their minds about this, and kind of feel that with some that there wasn't appropriate. The impression I got was that people felt like they didn't actually apply their minds the first time, and now they're applying their minds the second time. And I was concerned about how does that actually play in with the IFRIC. So for example, you know, we comment on something that has already been released by the ISB. We're looking for inconsistencies that can come up and addressing those inconsistencies. But, you know, is it really our responsibility to kind of send stuff back again for the ISB board to the board to rehash when they've already given appropriate deliberation? So I was contemplating that a little bit. But I am very supportive of actually this particular scenario actually going back to the ISB for their consideration. And then generally, just some of the comments I was a bit amused by, because, you know, they're very strong comments about the bank wouldn't allow us to do this, etc. I think the one thing that you said, Sue, the first time we actually discussed this, is that there's a specific reason why this was given such an extended application date, so that people could go back and actually talk to their bankers about their loan covenants, so that they could actually be proactive and not reactive to the process. So a lot of the comments that were made by respondents was a little short-sighted. It's a case of like, well, you know, I'm not going to be allowed to do this. Well, actually, have you even asked? And also, for example, some very generalized comments about the fact that, you know, a loan covenant is only specific at the point that it's tested. In actual fact, I've tested that in the banking industry in Africa, and that's not the case. I mean, the fact is that it's only a point of testing. It's the fact is that you technically are supposed to be in within those covenant ranges right through the period, unless you are a seasonal business, in which case the credit committee will actually go back and say, during these certain periods, we will not test because of X, Y, and Z. So I did find that the generalization that was made in some of the comment letters was a little bit generalized and wasn't specific enough to warrant the comments that they raised, because, you know, that's not actually factually what happens in at least in Africa. That's not what factually what happens. But other than that, I mean, I can understand, well, now that people have actually applied their minds the second time around, now they're going, oh, okay, all right. In actual fact, I'm not happy with this particular interpretation and we're concerned. So I think with some congratulations to the staff for actually raising this, and Sue, for you bringing it to the effort so that it actually can get the additional airtime that it clearly needs. Because if this had gone out, there would have been inconsistency in the economies and application, which would have been, you know, would have, again, just this whole concept of current, non-current is very, very relevant. Especially with loan covenants and how the markets are looking at businesses and looking at their balance sheets, etc. So I'm very appreciative of the fact that this, even though this hasn't yet been effective, the standard, it is still exceptionally relevant, and it's useful to kind of get ahead of the storm, if you want to put it that way, so that we don't have deep dissatisfaction by the users of the financial statements when the standard does become effective. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. And I think you raise a couple of good points, and I'll just make a couple of comments just so, partly in case people want to react to them. I think you're right that we need to be careful that the Interpretation Committee isn't used as a means of second-guessing decisions that the board has made, you know, with their eyes open, because people don't like outcomes. And I think here one of the challenges we've got is that this very specific issue was raised in comments on the exposure draft. And the reason why we are so specific on this point was because people said, oh, we're not sure what you meant here. And so it was sort of drafted in response to comments. And so I think we need to be careful with expectations management. I can't, you know, speak on behalf of the board, but as one board member, I don't think that there's much news in here for me in terms of the outcomes, and I continue to see why at the time I voted for this approach, because it's an objective way of assessing whether it seems like you're going to pass the test or not in the next 12 months that you know you're going to have to pass to be able to have funding certainty for 12 months without needing to ask your bank for leniency. So what I think is interesting, though, is where we get new pieces of information. And so that's why the staff, I think, have done a good job in this paper of trying to highlight new pieces of information that might be something that wasn't considered by the board that maybe they do want to take a look at. And the sort of poster child that's come up, I think, in the comments we've got back is this idea where there's sort of structural seasonality in your business. And so in that case, testing at this date, you sort of know you're set up for failure, and it's not necessarily the most objective way of assessing the likelihood of meeting a covenant in a few months' time. And I think that is useful information, but I think it would be great to try and identify the new pieces of information as opposed to just people just don't like this approach, because otherwise we could get into a situation where we're constantly re-deliberating stuff until people get the answer they want, and that's really not the objective here. But with that, people obviously must say what they want. Paul, I think you were next.
Thank you, Sue. I think what the responses in part are telling us is that while obviously people participated in your due process while the board was considering the amendments, I think some of the respondents and indeed some of our members did not really appreciate the outcomes that those amendments were leading to in certain fact patterns. And I think now that they have a better appreciation for the outcomes are now wanting to provide additional input. And I take your point about trying to discern between where people don't like the outcome versus where they may or may not have provided all the input that they would have liked previously. But I think that leads us to see that in some fact patterns, the outcome of the amendment in the minds of some may not be decision useful, to those who are using the financial statements. Secondly, and I again take your words of caution here, but this could be seen as a bit of an anecdotal PIR process, admittedly in advance of adopting the amendments, as to whether the amendments were in fact what the board intended. But thirdly, I think it also raises the possibility that there are other fact patterns out there wherein the borrower doesn't necessarily have control of its ability to meet a covenant, where practice may be mixed. And I'm thinking, for example, of circumstances where the borrowing arrangement may require the lender to provide audited financial statements on an annual basis, and the borrower cannot control whether or not it will be able to issue audited financial statements, because that's obviously going to, in the end of the day, come down to the auditor's ability and willingness to issue an audit opinion. My suspicion is that practice would not cause that particular covenant to result in current classification of the debt. But a literal reading of that, in light of the amendments, one might argue that that's a condition beyond the control of the borrower, and therefore should require current classification under the amendments. So I think it is entirely possible that what is coming to the surface here is constituents are now perhaps more focused than they were before, and we can debate the degree of focus they had originally, but appear to be more focused on these and related questions that the board might be well served to reconsider, including whether there are other covenant provisions that need to be fleshed out a bit more prior to adoption of the amendments. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Sophie.
So I believe that these amendments are not relevant in some cases, as commented by some respondents. And so, because they do not consider seasonality in particular, but also possible business growth or restructuring. And so in this context, I am not in favor of finalizing the agenda decision, to the extent that I believe that a report to the board needs to be done. And it would be confusing, in my view, as usually an agenda decision means that the committee decided not to add a standard setting project. I am in favor of reporting the potential consequence of applying the amendments, in particular as there is new information that the board did not consider when developing the amendments.
Thanks, Sophie. Paul.
Thanks, Sue. I fully recognize that debt classification is based on our rights model. That is, management intent and prediction don't play a part in this. Now, lenders and debtors, they negotiate rights about when payments are due and the application of covenants. The standard assumes that covenant tests over the next 12 months were meant to apply at the reporting date. And I understand that modeling and understand how the board could get there. I think what stakeholders are bringing up is that we're not only applying current rights to current facts, we're also applying future rights to current facts, which if you look at the examples they bring up on seasonal and emerging growth companies, they'll say is not representationally faithful or is not faithfully representing the agreement between the debtor and the lender. So I think they bring up some good issues. My suggestion would be, since the standard is not yet effective, and I think the best course of action is to coordinate with the board. And so it's to not finalize the agenda decision at this meeting, raise these concerns to the board, that the stakeholders have raised, ask their advice. If the board comes back and says, no, we understood that and that was the model, then I'd be happy to finalize the agenda decision at that point.
Thanks, Bob. John?
I think Bob might have been reading from my notes, because that's exactly what he said. It's exactly what I was going to say. I feel we can't. I really struggle with the idea of issuing an agenda decision at this moment until we have clarity from the board that even in instances of seasonality, such as those raised by the respondents, that this is the intended outcome. And if the board gives the feedback that yes, this is the intended outcome, then I think an agenda decision or some other guidance is absolutely critical. And I think then we have an absolute need to issue this guidance or some other clarification to ensure that people are interpreting the standard appropriately. But to me, that's a gating issue. And I think the first stage gate is to confirm that yes, and even in instances of seasonality, which affects a lot of businesses, that this is the intended outcome. So I fully agree with what Bob said in that course of action.
Thanks, John. Carsten.
Yeah, thanks. So in terms of whether to issue an agenda decision, I think on balance, I would be in the same place as Bob and John for the reasons they just articulated. So also be more inclined to wait for the outcome of the board discussions before issuing an agenda decision. However, I'd also like to add a few points that I think would be worth highlighting when bringing this to the board. So the first one is around, you know, whether or not this provides useful information. There has been a lot of, comments on this in the comment letters and so on. But on this point, I just would like to note that there were, quite a few comment letters from many different stakeholders, including preparers, the accounting profession, and standard setters. However, I didn't see any feedback from users on this point. Seems to be missing. So I thought, feedback from users might be quite relevant in terms of determining how to proceed with this. And so it might be helpful to better understand views from the users community when bringing this to the board. The second point I'd like to make is around, I think this discussion has made it clear that there are some, unresolved issues around related questions, especially around the application of the IS1 amendments to conditions that trigger repayment based on conditions that do not relate to the financial condition of an entity, such as those conditions related to cumulative performance or non-financial conditions. I think the comment letters also raise some, valid conceptual concerns around the, different approach that seems to be taken for conditions that are based on financial position versus other conditions. Obviously for conditions that are based on the financial position, I think the board discussion and the board intention has become quite clear to me. But then as others have indicated, BC48E seems to indicate that for conditions other than those relating to the financial position, such as cumulative performance or non-financial conditions, adjustments should in fact be made that appear to permit or even require consideration of management expectations. So my understanding is that the IS1 amendments would prohibit consideration of management expectation or judgment for conditions based on an entity's financial position, but not for other conditions, such as those based on an entity's financial performance. So I think it would be good to understand better the rationale for this distinction. Also, it wasn't entirely clear to me, how to apply this distinction for certain conditions that relate, for example, to both the entity's financial position and its performance, such as debt equity ratios, and also how to apply this, this logic, for example, to non-financial conditions. So, whilst an agenda decision might certainly support consistency for financial position-based conditions, my sense is that without, any additional actions by the board, there's a risk of substantial diversity around the implications of other conditions, such as those relating to performance or non-financial conditions. So for these reasons, my sense is that it might be quite helpful for constituents if the board considers these concerns, including whether more guidance might be helpful on how to assess conditions other than those based on an entity's financial position to ensure consistent application of the IS1 amendments, you know, for all types of conditions. Thank you.
Thanks, Carsten. Bertrand, and remember that all the problems you make for the board are soon going to be partly your problems.
Yeah, but I will try to make my comments as a committee member, first. even though I do totally appreciate your comment, Sue. Having said that, I would rather not finalize the agenda decision, but defer the matter to the board for further analysis and decisions above all. I think we can do that because the amendments are yet not into force. And if you remember, it was something I was not 100% comfortable with on the fact that we were asked as a committee to analyze those issues whereby the amendments had not yet come into force and there was no effective practice of these amendments. So I think there it's an additional argument to defer the matter to the board. And I think effectively, as mentioned in agenda paper 51B, apparently the effects of seasonality had not been fully maybe considered initially. So it may be worthwhile the board considers those. As I said during our first discussion on this, notably in case two, for instance, in the case two described in the initial paper and referred to at the beginning of this one, it's quite striking that the outcome of the amendments would neglect the will of the parties, and the will of the parties being both the borrower and the lender. And you have many activities, many businesses, notably in the media, in the media industry, whereby the year-end closing is 31st March, to effectively take into consideration the seasonality of sales and the impacts in the balance sheet of the working capital aspects of those sales. So it's something I'm rather sensitive to, and I would then go for deferring the matter to the board for further decisions.
Thank you, Bertrand. Young Soo.
Thank you. Like others, I also think that instead of finalizing the agenda decision, we have to report the board our technical analysis and the respondents' comments. Many people said many things before, so I want to just say two things. I understand that the board has gone through all the due process, so this is the final outcome of the board. But I think the board can review their final decision in two situations. The first situation is the case where a decision does not provide some useful information for decision making, as Paul said. The seasonality could be some new information I think the board did not think and could cause some kind of misrepresentation of the financial statements, which will, the in turn produce some not useful information. So in that case, I think the board can review their final previous decision. And another situation I think the board can reconsider their final decision is the case where the application can produce some kind of conflict. I thought about paragraph BC48E. I tried to apply it to some situation where a debt covenant requires two ratios, two financial measures. One is the cumulative financial performance measure, such as profit, and the other one is a non-financial performance measure like the debt-to-equity ratio. If the debt covenant requires both of those two measures, I think there could be some kind of confusions in applying paragraph BC48E, because those two measures are interrelated. So for example, profit, if it's increased, the equity is going to be increased. If equity increases, then debt-to-equity ratio is going to be decreased. So if we strictly apply paragraph BC48E onto this situation, then we apply the estimation or adjustment only to one measure and not to the other one. I think that kind of application could be confusing to many, many companies or many financial institutions. So if I wrap up, what I'm trying to say is that, I think the biggest challenge of the amendment is that this amendment does not allow any judgment. It seems to allow judgment or estimation only for the financial performance measure, but not for the non-financial performance measure. But the amendment does not say why. So that can make people confused. And also, I think that fact is important. But I also think fact-based sound judgment or estimation is as important as the fact, and sometimes can be more important than the fact itself. So I think there are many reasons why the board has to review what we collected in the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Yang-Su. Brian.
Thank you, Sue. Similar to others that have spoken, I think that we should refer the matter to the board and that we should not finalise the agenda decision, at least not at this stage. I appreciate that it is unusual to not finalise an agenda decision that we all think is essentially correct, and I also appreciate that there's a risk of moral hazard in not finalising an agenda decision that we think is correct. However, I'd make two points. Firstly, I think there are very specific reasons why we are not potentially finalising this agenda decision, as highlighted in paragraph 51 of the staff paper, and particularly the kind of examples of seasonal businesses and growing businesses discussed in paragraph 51. As Bertrand was saying, all sorts of different industries experience significant seasonality in their businesses. So it's not that we have identified some very specialist, obscure fact pattern where the answer is counterintuitive. I feel that we have identified quite a common mainstream kind of fact pattern that is experienced across many, many businesses. I think the other point I'd make is that, similar to the comments from Bob and John, if we do decide not to finalise the agenda decision, I feel that this is kind of a sequencing point, and we're deciding not to finalise the agenda decision now. I think the right sequence, the best sequence, is for the board to take a look at that. We'll have to see what the board makes of it. If the board stands its ground, then perhaps we should come back and put this analysis that we believe in into the IFRIC update. But for now, I think we should refer the matter to the board, and we should not finalise the agenda decision at this stage.
Thank you, Brian. Michael.
Thanks, Sue. Just a couple of points. In terms of decision usefulness, we're not having a technical debate right now, but it does seem slightly odd to me that information-wise, I'm not sure you get more information about whether you'd be able to defer in 12 months based on meeting a condition today that is actually not tested or not based on conditions in the future, or whether you've not met it today based on conditions in the future. But that's kind of more for the board to discuss. And if that was the board's intention, then fine. So I think I agree with those committee members who thought it was worth consulting the board. One thing I just wanted to add was that I noted some of the concerns expressed in the paper, and I did carry out some very unscientific outreach amongst supervisors and other Basel committee territories, and the feeling was that the concern expressed by some in paragraph 30 of the paper that corporates may feel the need to try and get preemptive covenant waivers, but banks may understandably be reluctant to give them those waivers where at the balance sheet date there has been no breach as at that date, and the NHS is based on future conditions, and that may well prove to be the case. Now, that may or may not be new information based on what the board has heard already, but that's anecdotally what I was hearing as well. So I just wanted to add to that point.
Thank you, Michael.
Jim? First of all, I would like to say that our staff did a very good job analyzing and summarizing all these feedbacks. And based on this, and I would like to comment on two issues. First, we should, as we did already, recognize that the concerns from the field is overwhelming. 36 with similar kind of comments, even though with very clear wording on the existing principles we issued or the board issued, still we see all these concerns. Something might happen or is happening on the field that we should know or we should be aware of. And even though our job as the committee is not to change or justify or even just a judge on the board, the outcome. But I think we do have the duty to pass the severe situation back to the board. So that's the one issue that we should know that even though it's unusual for us not to issue a kind of agenda decision at this point of time, but the situation is a little bit also significant enough for us to call upon this procedure. And secondly, I think as Sue mentioned earlier, our staff did a very good job on emphasizing or just identifying new information for the board to reconsider the existing decisions. And so that we do have a reason not to just give them the same disapprove or dislikes from the field to kind of emotionally move the board decision toward the other way around. But with new information is the solid reason for us to pass our kind of a collective suggestion or view back to the board. After these two points, I would like to say that we should hold on to the existing decisions for now and wait for the board and to say what else that we could do, or we should just wait for the further decisions. So yeah, no on question two, yes on question three. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Goro.
Okay, thank you. Like others, I don't think it is appropriate for us to finalize the agenda decision, and we better wait and confirm how the board think that with this new information. And I'm not very sure that this is as far as technical analysis concerns, as all of us agree that the staff's analysis is, I think, the perfect. So that it is so clear that how we should interpret that the standards, amended standards. But still, that what we have learned is that there are some cases that the amended standards might, work properly or may fail to represent the transaction faithfully. And I want to confirm that the board, that if the board that the expect this kind of outcome. And I also like to point out that I raised the concern, kind of due process concern in December. And Sue told me that this agenda is without formal submission, that there were so many concerns were heard that regarding the application of the amendment during the outreach. And in fact, that by issuing that our tentative agenda decision in December, we could gather that the new information on such cases as centenarity, like that case 2 or case 3. So in that regard, that I now recognize that this kind of the agenda, even without that formal submission, could work to, you know, that the help to improve the standards. So, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. It's nice to hear. Guy. Can't hear you yet, Guy. Do you want to try logging out and coming back in again, and I can try and let you in again later? Jens, in the interim?
Yeah, thank you. So I would like to start with replying to question 3. For me, this is it's the easier question. I fully agree that so with the recommendation set out in paragraph 54, that we should report to the board. I have a hard time with answering question 2, and I do have a question, and I need to have some further understanding of the due process handbook. So when I read the due process handbook, it's either that we can finalize an agenda decision or we can refer a matter to the board. I'm not sure whether we can say we defer an agenda decision and wait for the board for further information. So taking into account that technically we think the right answer is it's current in all these 3 scenarios, I do think it's not harmful if we finalize the agenda decision and leave it to the board, because due to the due process handbook and para 8.7, if the board is going to revisit the amendments in IS1, then it's up to the board to object to the agenda decision based on a plan to revisit IS1, right? So this would be my understanding. I cannot see out of the due process handbook where we can say, we as committee, we defer our decision, wait for the board. And when the board thinks we don't change IS1, we bring it back to our table. So therefore I would say, as technically we have landed where we are, I do think it's not harmful if we finalize the agenda decision and leave it up to the board, whether there are 4 board members that object due to a plan for revised standard setting. But it might be that I'm an outlier here, but I don't think it's harmful if we finalize the agenda decision, because we are all in agreement that technically there is a sound analysis that we have done so far. And if we think that standard setting is needed, we will. And I personally think we should recommend that the board revisits the amendment to IS1. But if the board is thinking about, no, we will not, and we will keep IS1 as it is, then there would be no 4 board members objecting our agenda decision. And so it makes its way into the red book, at least in the red book of 2022, right? So this would be therefore my preference to a strong preference on question 3. And with regard to question 2, I don't think it's harmful to finalize the agenda decision, take into account that the board can object.
Thanks, Jens. I'm just looking to see if I can see Guy, but I think in the interim, Renata, would you like to go next?
Yes, thank you. So I'd like to share with you some of the views in our jurisdiction. For example, we are in the opposite side of South Africa, where they measure the covenants throughout the contract. We have most of the cases, specific dates to measure it. So if we start to have the necessity to early start to discuss with the banks a waiver, we are going to raise a lot of skeptics and suspicions situations of the company's financial position. We might face restriction of credit because credit in our markets is very difficult to raise. Classifying one of our debts to short-term liabilities would trigger cross default. So we might be in a situation that all debts should be in the short term because it's just a looping. One is bringing another and another. So for us, the changes or the interpretation is there is a huge impact in the business. Every time that you have to go and start discussing with the bank about a waiver, usually the bank is going to ask you for something collateral. So it's going to be a lot expense to the companies to start so early to discuss something that might not happen. So we are the opinion that it's going to bring a lot of volatility to the balance sheet, and it's not necessary, it's not reflecting the contractual terms. The impacts here in our jurisdiction is huge. We have been discussing with the staff along this period in a specific meeting. So I would have the opinion to not finalize the agenda and raise the concern to the board. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Renata. Guy, let's see if you've got your sound back.
Can you hear me, Sue?
We can.
Ah, great. I'm not sure what my technical problems were there. I will be brief. I won't repeat the sentiments that I think have been expressed, but I want to simply say I'm very strongly in the camp of not finalizing the agenda decision, largely for the reasons in 51B and C of the paper. I think in light of using the word overwhelming feedback that someone else used, I think we have a duty to report that up to the board before we proceed to finalize in the circumstances. So I'm quite strongly in the camp of not finalizing at this point and providing all this feedback to the board.
Okay, thank you, Guy. Mary.
Although I put my hand up before Jens commented, I think I can frame my comments as commenting on Jens' kind of weighing of the due process handbook considerations. And I'm by no means an expert on due process handbook, but I think I put my hand up because I wanted to offer a general observation that not finalizing an agenda decision, in particular one where both the committee's analysis and the feedback received on the tentative agenda decision is that the analysis is correct, not finalizing has no effect in terms of providing relief from that reading of the wording in the amendment. I just don't want people to get too wrapped up that in the notion that by not finalizing it takes away this problem, you know, what is perceived by some as a problem. Having said that, I think not finalizing, particularly not finalizing at this point, is, in my mind, not a due process handbook problem because there's no, you know, being very narrow, there's no requirement that you finalize the agenda decision at the next meeting kind of thing. And so I think what it is instead is a pause to get input, not just from your board observers, but from the board as a whole on this before the committee makes up, you know, reaches a final conclusion about whether or not to finalize that. And frankly, while I think Jens, everybody who's been part of the conversation or followed it very, very closely would understand that if it went to the board and the board rejected it for, you know, objected to finalizing it, that this was constructive and collegial rather than, rather than dysfunctional. I think as a, just a basic communication matter, come, you know, people see things as coming out of one organization, even though the committee is separate from the board, and it would just sound like two pieces of the same organization shouting at each other. So I think it wouldn't be very helpful in terms of understanding about what the views are. So I also just want to offer a word of caution that people may be saying things like, I hope this amendment as drafted never goes effective. But if that's the case, I'd remind you that the wording is shown in the appendix to this paper that currently is effective, requires an entity to have the unconditional right to avoid settling. And in some ways, the amendment also offers a bit of relief by trying to explain what unconditional means in the eyes of the board. I'm just reminding people that that requirement is there until the amendment comes into effect. So people at least have to be willing, you know, able to explain how they have considered that requirement to have an unconditional right, especially in light of this discussion. But as a board observer, I think you're at a juncture where it does make sense to report your views on all the feedback you've received before making a decision about what way to go with this, but I don't want members of the committee to overread the significance of not finalizing an agenda decision, at least at this point, in terms of what the requirements of the amendment are. Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Mary. Well said. Rika.
Thank you, Sue. I fully agree what Mary already mentioned, so I try not to repeat what she's already mentioned. But as an old observer of the ISB, I truly appreciate the discussion of the IC members and the feedback all we received so far, and summary and analysis provided the staff, and as takeaways from all these good things, I deeply value the fact that the recent amendment to IS1 brings more consistent application to the classification of current and non-current liability. That's a significant benefit we have right now. But at the same time, I see discussion and the feedback we receive have narrowed the identified and narrow the restricted point of the focus that board might be considered in the future. So I really, it depends on your voting on the next question, but I think those two important points I really want to bring back to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Rika. And Lisa.
Thanks, Sue. Yeah, I just want to briefly add that I also support others that I don't believe that we should finalize the decision and we should refer it to the board. I think that when we first talked about the submission, a lot of the comments and concerns that we had at the time, I mean, we all agreed with the technical aspect of what was in the amendment of IS1, but I think that the concerns that we raise and the seasonality and everything else that, you know, that's come through in the comment letter. So I think it's definitely appropriate to put it back to the board and have the board reconsider, and then I guess we go from there if it comes back to us to look at that, whether or not we finalize that decision or what's most appropriate.
Thanks, Lisa. Goro.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to respond briefly to Kasten's comment on the no response from users on this tentative agenda decision. I think that the agenda decision of interpretation committee is usually too, technical for users, so that it is quite understandable that the users fail to respond to this agenda decision. But still, I believe that if they know that our analysis suggests that if the amendment of IS1 to be read correctly or properly, that the, it may fail to reflect that the seasonality of the covenants. And the, this may be, the user may be rather shocked at the, so I think that this is very very important for users as well, but the, and also that the, they may have strong, they may show, provide their opinion that the, if they are asked that the possible consequences of the application of the current amendment. Thank you.
And just on that investor point, we've already done a little bit of work starting to talk to investors about this issue. With the idea would be that, assuming that the committee, we are going to report back to the board either way, but that part of what we would look at would be trying to make sure we understand what's useful information from an investor perspective on this current non-current issue. So it's sort of, it will be something we're going to work on. And decisions are really something that I sort of routinely look at. Anne, did you want to come in?
Thanks, Sue. I appreciated the comment made very early on that some of the comments might seem like people wanting to reopen the whole issue. And so I think we do have to remember that the board looked at all these issues very carefully. There was a considerable amount of time and consideration that went into the decision around making the amendments to IAS 1. So I can hear that the committee does favour taking information back to the board. And I appreciate that the staff have really highlighted the two areas where they think there's additional information in the comment letters, because I think it's the additional information that the board needs to look at, not to go back and redo what a previous board has done. Thanks, Sue.
Okay, thanks, Anne. At this point, I think we can get a show of hands on whether, on who wants to finalise the agenda decision at this stage. I think I know what the answer will be, but for formality's sake, can I get a show of hands for those who want to finalise the agenda decision now? Okay, got one. Brian, no?
I do not want to finalise it, thank you.
Okay, so that's one. So on that basis, we won't finalise the agenda decision now. I think the plan is that we will take the feedback that we've heard today from committee members. We'll report back also on the feedback that we heard in the and feedback that we got on the tentative agenda decision as summarised in the paper. I think the idea will be that we will highlight in particular new information that was brought to light through this process about the some of the effects of applying these amendments in the way that was set out in the tentative agenda decision, the seasonality aspects, etc. But I think it is important just to flag to people that what Mary said is true, that by issuing an agenda decision, it doesn't mean the requirements go away. They're still in the book. It does mean that we have the opportunity to ask the board if they want to change something, and so we'll be talking to them about that. I think one thing that has become apparent to me, and I'm pleased that we decided to bring this issue sort of proactively to the committee, because it really brought to the surface a lack of awareness at a minimum of the, some of the effects of this amendment, and I think it's fantastic that that's been highlighted to the market. I'd sleep better at night if maybe I hadn't kicked this hornet's nest, but I think it was the right thing to do, and I think we've got useful information through this process. So I think it's been a good thing. And I think, unfortunately, there's probably some of our stakeholders who have been reading the requirements in IAS 1 perhaps in the past, and certainly even with the amendment to say, do I have an obligation to pay as at the reporting date, when in fact the test is essentially as at the reporting date, do I have the right to defer? And what this amendment in 72A was doing was setting out how you make that assessment where you've got covenants. Now, I think what's highlighted, which is helpful, is there's a lack of clarity for some in terms of the scope of that. for financial position versus other types of covenants. Also concerns about whether it always gives you a good objective-based assessment in cases of seasonality. I think the other thing that's really highlighted in some of the discussions I've been involved in is just how binary this test is. To state the obvious, you're current or non-current, and you can only get so much information with such a binary distinction. At a minimum, if something's current simply because of a covenant test, perhaps that's a useful piece of information that investors should be aware of. So I think we've got enough information to report back to the board, and we'll keep the committee updated in terms of where we're at with the discussions with the board and the comments we hear from the board, and keep you in the loop on that process. Anything I've missed, Petrina or Gustavo? No? Is that
no, that sounds good. Thank you very much. Okay. I think good input for us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we all need to be careful helping to manage expectations for stakeholders. I'm not sure that we've heard, I personally have heard anything that would suggest that we should be moving to a test of am I in default as at the reporting date. So we're talking, I think, about new information here that wasn't looked at by the board in the past. And with that, I think we've definitely earned a break. So I suggest that we break now for about 15 minutes and reconvene at 2:30 p.m. London time.